Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50 and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you dance with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you dance with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. Today, we have a very special guest with us coming all the way from Scotland. Annie McKenzie comes from a family who suffers with Huntington's disease. Annie is also the founder of the Live for Life Foundation in Scotland. We are excited to have Annie on the show with us today so we can hear what another organization is doing across the world for the Huntington's disease community. Now, I just want to give everyone a forewarning. Annie is coming through Skype. So sometimes we have problems with tunnel sound, so I pre-apologize if the sound does not come in clear, but hopefully I told Annie to scream, so hopefully we could understand and we don't have a problem with sound through Skype. So welcome to the show, Annie.
Hi, Katie. Thank you for having me all the way from Boney, Scotland.
Yes, we are excited to have you. So let's get right into the show and tell us about how Huntington's disease is a part of your life and how,
okay,
the first time you heard about Huntington's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. When I was born, just prior to I was born, my father was shown signs of a condition unknown to my mother. She battled for 10 years to find out what was wrong with my father. And it was through her job that she worked for a pharmaceutical company. And one day she was delivery to a hospital near where I stay now in North Lanarkshire. And it was a mental health hospital. And my mother collapsed in the hospital. And the pharmacist who knew her because of the years she'd been in the hospital came over to see her. And she started speaking to the pharmacist about what was going on with my father. And the pharmacist said, I have to introduce you to a doctor. And the doctor was a Dr. Jean Bolt. The doctor came down and spoke to my mother and arranged a meeting to come to the house to meet my father. And within a very short period of time, he was diagnosed with Huntington's. Then I was born. My mother was very scared because at the time I was born, she knew all her children were a 50-50 risk of contracting Huntington's. But life went on. She got support from Dr. Jean Bolt. As far as monitoring my father's behaviour, his drugs, any respite, the doctor would arrange this stuff. But as a child myself, I just seen him as my dad. I didn't know what was going on. My sisters, they were older, so they had experienced some of the mental health issues, like violence, arguments. But when I came along, I never seen any of that because he was highly medicated when I was a kid. But he was still my father. Nothing was ever mentioned in our house about Huntington's. Anybody mentioned it in front of the children, it was quickly told to be quiet. I went through my childhood, just knowing my father wasn't well. I would run home from school and get him home. He was in a day centre, and I would run home from school and get him off his bus and make him a cup of tea. And my mother would have to work, sisters were at school. And that went on for until I was 9 years old. He was living in the hospital. Again, he's still my father, no matter what, he's still my dad. And then he sadly passed away as I turned 11 years of age. Again, I still didn't know what was wrong with my dad. I didn't even believe my mother that he was dead. And after that, we moved house and my mother became very depressed. She tried to take her life, maybe 12 at that age. Again, I still didn't know what the condition was my father had. But I mean, again, I'm sure this name, Huntington's disease. And at the age of 16, I decided I would go to a genetics department at the York Hill Hospital in Glasgow and find out what this Huntington's disease was. But I couldn't tell my mother because she was so devastated of the impact on her life and our life. So I went along, and that's when I found out Huntington's was when I was 16. They told me I was at risk. If I wanted to have children, what I would have to do, and all the kind of in-depth stuff. So I decided that day what I had put my mother through, what I had put my sisters through, and now how I was feeling, I wouldn't have any children because if there was no cure, my cure would be not to have an next generation. But I had to keep that to myself. I couldn't tell my mother because it would upset her that I knew so much at that age. So I just focused on working, making sure my mother was okay. Again, she tried to take her life again. And by the age of 24, she tried to take her life again. And I told her if she attempted it again, I would have to let her die because I was too emotionally drained by that time with it all. But can I give my mother a will to help? So she got better and upheld. My other sisters, it was okay. Kind of two of them, it was hard to grow up with two of them. But there was constant arguments and fights. One was very protective over me, but my sister could be quite violent towards me. Didn't know what was going on. And I used to ask my mother, did I have a different father? Did you have a different father from me? Because I didn't feel that I was the same as my sisters. By the age of 27, she used to just say to me, you're different from the rest, you're okay, love your life, have babies, get married. But I was still in this fear of being at risk of having Huntington's. I never told any of my friends, I never told my work colleagues, I never told my management team. I was advised not to tell anybody because of discrimination. So you end up with two lives. You have your out-of-home life and then you have your HD life. And that was very hard to manage that at a young age. And I got to a point that I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't live this double life. I started telling my management. They were a bit shocked that I couldn't tell them when I first started working for the company. So it got better that way, that I wasn't hiding all the time. And then when I was 32, I think, early 30s anyway, one of my sisters was diagnosed with Huntington's, and it was a complete shock. Although we knew they were all at risk, still a shock to hear that they were going to have to go through this again. It was very sad. I then helped her and her family as much as I could. She lives 300 miles away from us. She lives in England. And then my mother sadly lost her life to cancer when I was 35. So I became the young sister who was the kind of most forceful person in the family. Anything that had to get done, we go to Annie. She's a bit more loudmouthed than the rest. A bit of a screamer, as you call me, Katie. So it was tough. It was tough. And then my other sister, she started showing signs. And again, I went along, she got tested, we came back positive, and it was like, right, okay, we have to get organised, we have to find out what's out there. When I was young, my mother was always the one that went and found out about Huntington's. We were always kind of protected from that stuff. But now that she had passed away, I had to be the one. They had to go out and show some information of what help was available for my sister in England and for my sister in Scotland. And in 2009, I attended my first Scottish Huntington Association conference. And at the conference, I asked them why they were not focusing on awareness. And at the time, they weren't focusing on awareness as in like general public or like really telling professionals how life is for Huntington's family. They were more focused on caring for the people. Yeah? But I felt with not raising awareness and being honest about the actual condition and how it impacts their life, it was having a severe impact on HD family's life. So I decided in 2010, I would plan host an event, a football event at the high school. Two of my nieces attended at the time, to help their teachers understand what it was for them to grow up, being at risk, but also caring for a mother with Huntington's. The event was a success. We got the school on board, we got local authority on board, we got government members on board, we got teams involved, we got the Scottish Football Association involved. And that has led to us, on the 2nd of September, we're now having our seventh annual football event. And we now attend other football tournaments to hand out information and just to engage with anybody that attends these events. You can meet housewives, doctors, nurses, and in fact, the last one was speaking to a psychiatrist. So we're a good source of just targeting everybody across the board in the general public. And it's not just about raising awareness within professionals. I find if you raise awareness within the community as well, the Huntington's families can feel more part of their own community. And that helps them live better within the community and not feel that isolation. And breaking down the barriers of awareness. And people like it, people want to know. And I've noticed in particular that my family members and their community, they feel a lot better within their community because their neighbours don't understand, the shop owners understand. So if something goes wrong, they don't say, oh, that person's drunk, they know that person's not well. So the reaction is different. The football event led to, a year after the first football event, we wanted to host another event. And the Scottish Football Association, we asked them to support the event again. And they said to us, if you apply for charity status, we'll always support your event. We asked for them never to give us a one-off cash fund. We wanted their continued support to support us, but also to give the young footballers attend the event. To show the recognition, the SFA was recognising something that they were doing for us. So every year, the SFA, they supply the certificates for all participants, and they supply 250 posters, which some are used for advertising, and the rest are given to the young participants of the event. So they continue to do that. And again, that's a huge achievement just to have the Scottish Football Association to support such a small charity. In 2011, we decided to have a live music event in memory of a young boy, 18-year-old, who's had a lost life due to cancer, and thought we'll have a memorial event for him, and his mother had Huntington, or has Huntington. And it was a way of saying goodbye to him, but also raising awareness for youth cancer and Huntington. And during the event, some of the young boys came to me and asked, could we get more of this? Could we raise awareness for Huntington's through music? And I said, well, as long as we're achieving the awareness, we can use awareness to do anything we want, you know. And it's not just about targeting one set group of people within society, it's about targeting everybody in society. So we're now planning our 17th live music event. We've held events all over Scotland. The feedback we get from, we have them in all different venues, in pubs, in function suites. We had one in the theatre. People said, why are you having them all these different styles of venues? Why not just hire a private function suite and do that? But we want to go into the community. And if it means going into a pub and raising awareness within that pub in the community, that's what we'll do. But we don't check the pub out. When we speak to the landlords, we make sure there's disability access for anybody that comes along with Huntington's. And we make sure that we're dealing with a good crowd. We're not just dealing with a rowdy crowd that just wants live music. We're there for a purpose. There's a reason for us to come up and arrange what we're doing. And the outcome has been outstanding from the general public. Some have been in tears at the gig. Like, they're so shocked at the condition they've never heard of it. And to give somebody with Huntington's that chance of feeling a normal life again, it gives them a feedback of feeling they're giving something to us just by attending their event. We even had one in a caravan site in the north of Scotland. And because it was in a caravan park, there was people from all over the UK in this event. And again, we were saving the rest in Scotland then, we were putting it through England as well. So the live music events have led to nurses attending, doctors attending, again, general public attending, care workers attending. And we do a short speech to start to explain who we are and what we do and why we do it. And during the event, I'll go around and speak one-to-one with anybody that wants to talk to us. We hand out information on how to care for somebody with Huntington's. And we also hand out information on what our goals are and what we have achieved and what we support. And people now come to us and say, can we have an event here? Can you come here and hold a gig? Can you go there? And it's good that we've got a Live for Life Foundation, everybody that's involved with it, they're all volunteers. And they all come, majority of them come from Huntington's families. So you can imagine the strain that we're already under. So we've got to know how much workload we take on. That, by doing that, it's actually improved my life, how I cope with everything, and how I can help my family better, because of my own mental health isn't impacted in the same negative way as it was, some more positive way. So, yeah, I think I'm rattling on here. But the foundation through the football and the music, it now led us into speaking to more government members, speaking with the First Minister of Scotland. I joined other neurological groups, and through the NHS neurological groups, I was able to speak directly with the NHS board members. I recently joined a group, well, 2012 I joined a group, and we helped the NHS build a pathway on how to support neurological patients better. I was asked to do a piece of artwork on how the impact of Huntington's can be on someone's life, and I was then asked permission, could the image of the artwork be part of the pathway? The doctor that asked me, sorry, the board member that asked me for the use the image, she felt the pathway was good when it was all text, and she wanted to put the image in there to give them a realistic impact view of how Huntington's is, so they get the grasp of the importance of the text and how the importance of following the pathway to help people with Huntington's, which I'm very pleased. So it's 131 page document. My date picture is on page 94. So I'm quite chuffed with that.
Yeah, no, I think it's so neat because it to me it's so cool because it's all about education, and is really interesting to me to hear that you started, you know, you really started for your nieces to educate schools, and
it's never had a focus on money. Any money that's raised, it's paid into future events and any costs we've ever had. Our focus is how much of an impact we can have pre, during, and post event. That's our big thing. And then we analyse that to see how far that awareness has went in that part of that county. And that's where we get our fulfillment for that area, you know. I think if we raise awareness and focus on how we have to improve care and understanding, no amount of money can pay for that. You can't put a value on
it. Sure. And you guys also focus on law enforcement education, right?
So we've done some. I've spoken directly, and it's been through incident matters that I've kind of that I've had to go and speak to the police, like my sister, and she kind of ticks off. I've had to deal with maybe 6-7 different police officers on different occasions, and other kind of family members of anything happens I've had to do. And it's good because they listen. They have been asked to attend and do talks, but nothing has came of that as yet. But the good thing is, we meet, and if there's ever any issues in my area, especially, they contact us and ask, how do we approach it, how do we handle it. And it's good that you can get a police officer to take on that advice and deal with it. One of the times my sister kicked off and the police officer didn't know whether to treat her as a criminal or treat her as somebody that had Huntington's. And I said, well, you've got to be one with your police kind of attitude, but relax it a bit, with your authority, but go in as a friend. You're there to help her. You're there to guide her. You're there to make sure she's safe. And he did. He carried it out very well. Also happy for one of my nieces. And again, the police officer, I couldn't commend them enough. And I give them bands, I give them information, I tell them to share the information. Anybody I come into contact with who knew very little about it, it's in the professional sector, I give them information as much as I can. And we also got information on the NHS internal service, internet service. So frontline staff can type in Huntington's disease and find out exactly how they have to deal with certain situations. Prior to that, when we typed in how to handle HD, they came across our doctor's email address and they would have to email him to find out how to deal with it. and I was very concerned about the patient, but also for the staff. And with the help of a doctor, John Stone, who's based here in Scotland, myself and him, we looked through some international HD information and European information. And John was able to pick three different documents that was so direct that the staff could help the frontline staff. So when all we do events and we talk to this one, we talk to professionals, something will always crop up that I can then say, well, we cannot have to improve on that, can we improve on this? And to respect the charity gain, yeah, we get the help we need to achieve it. And it's simple things that makes a huge impact. You know what I mean?
And also, I was going to ask you, because do you actually go and talk? Because I know you guys talk to a lot of professionals, like you were saying. But do you go and talk to, like, a lot of, like, doctors and neurologists as well about Huntington's disease? How is the care there in Scotland?
Well, as I said, in the 70s, when my father was alive to then, and how quick a response he got then to how slow a response my sister gets now. The care is there, but because Huntington's comes under genetics, it's a totally different level of care. And we're trying to get the NHS to realise they have to put it under mental health, and then there's a quicker response. There's also a quicker response of putting them into the right care. Putting them into the wrong, like, ward. It's not fair on the staff, and it's not fair on the person with Huntington's. So we're trying to, with me joining a group called the Neurological Voices of Scotland, I can speak directly to NHS board members. I've recently been asked to go to the top tier of the NHS board to speak to them direct. I've attended Parliament talks. I've attended, again, carers talks with the First Minister, with government members from all over the state. We also got approached by a Glasgow City Council councillor back in 2013. And he asked, he's very interested to hear more about Huntington's and what the city of Glasgow could do for the 100 families that live within the city. And on the 12th of September 2000, a unanimous vote was passed through Glasgow City Council to support the families more. And that was provided by a group called the Long-Term Conditions Group. So I went and met the Long-Term Conditions Group. And I knew a bit about them because they were a branch of the McMillan Nurses. I don't know if you've ever heard of an organisation called the McMillan Nurses. They support cancer patients. And my mother had cancer. The booklets and the information they give, I always said something like this is needed for Huntington's. So when I met the manager of the Long Conditions Group and she told me that who she worked for and what it was connected to, I knew right away it was a very good service to help the Huntington's families. But it was just that it didn't happen in the city of Glasgow. I wanted it to spread out Scotland. So I've since asked the First Minister, we have to have this service. And not just for Huntington's people, it's for a lot of other conditions that could benefit hugely from how fast the response this group has. They go in, meet the family, and within 3 months, anything is resolved. And it's a huge thing emotionally, financially, and hope that they can. So this councillor still supports the cause. He wants us to do a lot more. And I've asked him to help me, like, get the government involved. I just keep fighting, Katie. I can't just fit. Although I started this, as you say, for my nieces, it was the whole awareness, and I can't say no when it comes to Huntington's. I've just got to keep fighting for everybody. And making the... That's why I got to the point where if I was just focusing on one area in Scotland, there's 52 counties in Scotland, and if I focused on one area at a time, that would take me a very long time. And that's one day I decided, no, I have to go to the government, I have to go to them, and I have to go to the top tier of the NHS to make them listen. So there's an impact, a quicker impact over a shorter period of time.
Well, you're doing amazing things over there, and it's all about education and awareness, and you're definitely bringing that to Scotland. And I think this organization is fantastic. You know, you guys do 16 live music events, right, throughout Scotland, 7 youth football events.
We're planning our 17th live music event now. That'll be on the 15th of October, and we're planning our 7th annual youth football event, and that'll be on the 16th of September.
No, I have to ask. It's football. So football, it's like soccer, right?
Soccer event. Yeah.
My kids love soccer. They're big soccer players. So they would love that. And then talking to professionals.
Yes. We had professionals attending the event to present the young footballers their medals and their certificates. But we've also recently been hiring mascots, and that just gives it a different edge for the kids. And we found we don't speak to the kids about hunting teams because they're all 8, 9, 10 year old. And we find that's a bit young for us to be speaking about hunting teams. So at football, we speak to the people that come up to watch the game. And again, as I said, you can meet anybody at these events. But we found with the kids, one kid in particular, he played in their first event in 2010, and he attended another event in 2013 or 14, and he came up to me, remembered HD. He knew he hadn't been told a lot, but he knew there was a condition called HD, and if he was aware, he was going to give somebody a chance. So it's planting the seed within the younger generation. They get their medal, they've got the logo, charity logo on the medal, it's on the poster, it's on the certificate, so it's there. And if any of the kids have questions, we keep it very basic. But we tell them the intention to give somebody hope for their life. And that's a huge thing for them. But it's good that the kids are coming, actually helping us and volunteering at what events they're doing there. So yeah. And again, we're down that stigma within the youth. So the youth don't feel isolated when they're in school or when they do things within the community. People have an understanding what's going on in their lives.
Yeah. And you were the first registered Scottish charity ran by HD Families, there, right?
Yes. We applied for charity spaces early 2011, and we were awarded it within the month, 2 months. Because we'd already told to the charity regulator, Oscar, that what we were doing was something that had to be done. And so we were very cheap for that.
So for 5 years you've been, since 2011 awarded as a foundation, but you were doing stuff prior to that, weren't you?
Yeah, we've done one event prior to that. We held that under the banner of Scottish Hunting Association. But when we wanted to do a second one, they weren't too keen about doing a second one, but we knew the amount of people that we spoke to, that said key during the first event, we knew we had to go and do more. We knew we had to bring communities together for this cause. So that's why we've done it. And this is something for ourselves as well. I mean, when you stand up and talk about Huntington, it's a relief, and I don't deny that. But it's also good for the young generation to see that we can stand up and talk and to show them that they're scared, they totally understand your fears. But look where I am now, and please never give up.
Yeah, exactly.
Focus on what you can do now and then achieve, just keep achieving. And I can't say you're going to be okay, but you'll have a better life than just sitting in the bedrooms all the time worrying about being at risk of hunting.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. I have three children at risk and of HD, and we sit and talk very openly about it and try to empower them as much as I possibly can. Yeah, absolutely.
My young niece wasn't coping in school, and we had to eventually remove her from school, and we decided to make home educator. Because every school in the area, we thought we could get her into a place that was either no place or she didn't want to go to school. And I went and spoke to the education department here in my county in Wisconsin, and I inquired about home education. I mean, this is coming from a female that left school, as I said, there's no test results, no exam results. And I knew my youngest niece, she's a very clever young girl, and I couldn't let her life fail due to lack of input from education authorities. And we spoke to the education department and they told them about the foundation. And they said to use the foundation as her education. It was like, take the meetings with you. Only the accounts got to do that because that covers her math. The meetings will cover her communication. Let her help you plan events. Let her attend as much things as possible. And that will cover her education needs. And when we first started doing it, she wouldn't speak to anyone because she felt as if the education system had failed her. So mm-hmm. we had one meeting, then we had to have a second meeting with the education department, and she still wouldn't speak to anybody. And I told her she had to speak because she couldn't. These people were starting to think maybe that I was the pusher of to make this happen for her, that she had to speak to let them see that she was involved in how her path was going. So she would speak very well. And then on the third meeting, on the last meeting that we had with them, she spoke the whole day. She took over the meeting, and we just couldn't believe the difference in a year and a half in this young adult, from being very withdrawn to being very kind of confidently outspoken about where she was going in her life and what she wanted to do with her life and where she had been. So, yeah, there's mm-hmm. been a tool for education. So I'm very proud of that. But the one step, yeah. they've only done that because it was my niece. And I try to tell them, no, if any ways ever have struggles with anything, please just call us, please just Facebook us. We're here to do for as much as what I've done for anybody in my family or anybody else, I'll do for anyone. I don't want mm-hmm. kids suffering mm-hmm. here.
That's fantastic. Well, yeah, and I think getting in early. I'm sorry, what did you say, Annie?
I'm saying I feel like an angel.
I think
that when you've got kids, you've got to be as open as you can with them. You know, you can't love that hidden life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is really an interesting fact that we were talking about. You were able to trace HD back in your family into the 1800s. Is that correct?
Yes, that was Dr. Jean Boat that done that. Part of her studies when she was a young, I don't know if she was a young doctor at that age, she done this, and she had studied 10 Scottish hunting families. She was trying to find traits within families, if there was any connection, and I mean, it was early studies, you know, so she was trying to find anything at all she could find. And it was through that she traced my family back to my day 1800s of having Huntington. It was interesting, but she sadly passed away now. But the impact, her education and her understanding of Huntington's within the UK is still huge. People, doctors will actually shake my hand because I know her. Well, I knew her, you know, because she's so really respected within the profession. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's sad at the same time to think how many family members, how many ancestors did suffer at the hands of Huntington's.
And also exactly what you're targeting within your organization is how many people have suffered, but then how many people just don't know about it. And I think that Help for HD International, we very much are like your foundation, that we really want to, you know, spread education and awareness. And, you know, education, that you know, creates empathy and people will start. I always just, when I go in public with my husband, I'm sure you know this, I'll say, oh, he has Huntington's disease. And people look at me like, I don't know what to say because they don't know what I'm talking about. And it's just so frustrating. I just wish some people would go, oh, okay, you know, and have an understanding of what my husband's dealing with. But
when someone says to me, oh, I know Huntington's, I'm quite shocked by that because it's very rare. and I thank them very much, you know, for being aware. But I still give them up to the information.
We're
learning new things every day. We're learning new coping mechanisms every day. And we've got to share that. Yeah, that's how I see it. We can't give up. I can't give up for the next generation, you know.
That's right. Yep. They're dependent. Yep, exactly. So real quick, can we talk about the album? I think this is really neat to talk about the album. And I'd like to put the link up to where people can get this album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a collaboration of artists, right? A collaboration of artists, and the sales go to the foundation.
So I think
I was listening to some of the music before we went on the show, and it's really a good album.
The track carry, that was actually for them to listen to Never Give Up, and that was wrote by a Glasgow musician. He attended one of our events and he asked me a lot of questions, and then a few days after the event he contacted me to see if I've actually wrote a song for you. So that's just to tell us to carry on and to never give up.
Well, I'm going to put these links up on the website and stuff for people to see the album and every and I don't think I have it up on the show page because I had just gotten the link to the album. So I will put that up for everyone to see. And Annie, do you have any? I think we covered almost everything that we were going to talk about. Do you have any other final thoughts you would like to share or anything else?
I found I knew the Scottish Government had been giving funding to Scottish Hunting Association, and at the moment they're focusing on health care. And it's very good that we've given this, but I just, they've taken the real count of Huntington and not just kind of muffle over what society needs to hear about it. We want the truth out there about Huntington. We want people to know what we're facing behind our doors. And but we also want professionals to react in the right way. I find if you're speaking to social work services, you've really got to be careful in what you say to them in case they react the wrong way. And I recently told them, no, I was just going to tell them everything. And if they didn't listen to me, well, I would get doctors to help me out to let them listen. So they now listen to what they have to say. So it's not just about following a guideline within a service. We live outside that guideline, you live outside that box. So we have to get professionals to come into our box and into our world and learn from us as much as we can to learn how much is in the system that we can tap into. As far as the National Health Service, they've got a habit of you've got that condition and that's where you go with that condition. And with being a member of this Neurological Voices group, I was able to tell the NHS, you know, we can tap into what's in that condition, we can use the service which is in this condition. So they've now even realised that it's not all about pigeonholing people and putting you in a box. It's about getting the services out to give you a better health, better life at the end of the day. So that's all we want, Katie. We just want a life. And that's why Love for Life got its name, because we just want to live to get a life.
Yeah, and you guys, your government in Scotland, what is your government? Do you guys have a first minister? So you do spend a lot of time talking to the government.
Well, yeah, I've met her twice. She gets it. She understands it. She attended the Scottish Hunting Association conference in 2009. So she gets what Huntington did. Again, they have to change policies. They have to change things within the health service. And this is what I'm trying to kind of drum into. They can't just say they're going to do it. They have to do it. And it's not just the health service. It's just the police service have to be more aware of it. Social services have to be more understanding. Because in the minute, we know the violence that can occur within the family. And when social services hear that this happened, the first reaction is then is to split up the family in the same way. You can't put that impact on them because it's not a normal situation. It's a situation that you support and not. So I fight for that as well. I fight for the family growth.
Yeah. And you do that through education, which is exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. And real expectations as well. I mean, when I'm dealing with things that matters with my sister, they have been able to educate social services regards to that. They've made social services in Glasgow. If they don't listen to, if I'm dealing with a social worker or a medical professional and they're not listening, I'll just go to the boss. You know, that's why I'm the first minister. If you're not going to listen to me, I'll go to your boss. I'll make you listen. You know, because we can't keep living life. We can't not our age bracket. We must do what we have to do again. For the next generation, so we have that better. And it means us being tired on a night, make sure their lives are a bit better. Well, I'll do that. And I've got that extra time. I don't have kids, you know. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I always say after I do a talk, you know, we're fighting to be the last generation to live with Huntington's disease, like our generation and past generations have been forced to do. And that's in everything with education and like your social services and resources and all of it. I mean, it's just it's, we need to educate and we need to make the generation a brighter horizon for the future generation to come when it comes to HD.
I'm also a member of the European Huntington's Disease Network. I'm a family member of them, and I attend conferences every 2 years. I'm going to go to a conference in The Hague on the 15th of September, and it's amazing the amount of professionals and the passion they've got for it, but the amount of questions they want to ask you about everyday life. So I really get engrossed by it all, and I go there and I bring back information, I share it with other families. I share it with professionals, I share it with students, and I've also helped the Glasgow City Marketing Bureau to build a bid to bring the European Huntington's Disease Network to Scotland in 2018. For the benefits of the professionals, but the students and the families. So hopefully on the 17th, 18th of September, I'll find out if it's actually come to Scotland. So that'll be a huge thing.
Yeah. Well, it's been I'm so excited to have been able to interview you today. We've been watching each other on social media for a long time, and I know everyone loves you. I said, oh, I'm going to interview Annie Mack, everyone was very excited, and they're excited to hear from you, and we love what you're doing over there in Scotland, and you are a fighter, my friend, and keep fighting and educating and doing what you're doing.
We might all live in different parts of the world, but we've all got the same goal, and that's good. It's good that we just need to come together for that bigger voice. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So people will get the impact.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We'll share that knowledge and that expertise, family expertise, to improve life.
Yep, I agree with you. We're an HD community, a world HD community. So it is wonderful when we can come together on an international level and share information and really, because HD is the same in Scotland as it is in the US, right? We still have the same fight. Our loved ones are suffering, and we need to come together and help.
Yeah. The HD person, how we can do that. And as you know yourself, it fulfills your day when you can educate one person or 100 people about 100 things. It gives me a very good feeling that I have achieved that, you know.
Keep on working. Well, okay, so I think that we may have to wrap the show now because we are running down on time. But thank you so much, Annie, for coming on today. It was so nice to actually hear your voice in person, and hopefully one day we'll get to meet each other. That would be fantastic. So, all right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you again, Annie, for coming. And just one more announcement, you guys, this September 10th, we are having HD Awareness Day, and that is in Lompoc, California, really soon. So if you're in that area, please come out and join us at that event. Mm-hmm. And we also on the 22nd have an event. What did you say, Annie?
I will stay here on the 10th of September. I will be there virtually.
Oh, you are?
No. I can Skype. I will not be in the U.S.
We should Skype you in. It's going to be a great event. See, and that's another thing. It's an awareness event. You know, just like, so we're doing the same thing here at Help for HD International that you're doing over there, just trying to bring awareness as much as we can. All right. Well, so I think.
I'm looking to speak to you.
Say that one more time, Annie. You kind of went tunneled again.
I was looking to speak to you, and I hope I hope we learn from each other. Which we already do.
Yes. From each other. Yeah, I know. I really am looking forward to working close with the Live for Life. I know Help for HD is excited about working and partnering with you guys, and I think it'll be a really great relationship. So more to come on that. I think we can wrap up the show. Once again, thank you, Annie, so much for coming on, and we will talk to you guys soon. Everyone else, tune in next week for Ask Dr. Goodman show, and same time, same place. So we will talk to you then. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a safe night. Bye, Annie.
Bye. Bye.